Namaste, good morning. You might hear some noise in the background. I believe some metro work is going on. Construction. Today is an auspicious day in the Hindu calendar. It is referred to as Dasera or Vijayadashmi, the day of victory. There is a lot of symbolism behind this day. And of course, the spiritual symbolism is the victory of the self over the thinking mind of the ego. Good over evil, externally. When Lord Ram defeats Ravan, but with tremendous symbolism, the 9 days preceding it, Navratri, where various forms of the goddess Shakti, consciousness, are worshipped, which is what all these spiritual teachings are aimed at, the worship of consciousness. Seeing through the veil of illusion, a direct seeing and a direct insight into situations, relationships, daily living. I would like to begin now with a question which was received, which from the emails that I get, it seems that quite a few people are in a similar situation. And therefore, this is what I have chosen, which we can look at through the lens of the teaching. I have been listening to your talks since the past few months, and they've helped me cure anxiety and depression that I've been suffering for the past few years. Most of my questions related to existence and the source have been addressed in one way or the other. But there's one question which I need answered. Everything is happening as it is meant to. But I also believe that everyone has an auric field and some of them are really toxic. You can keep on forgiving them, but the person keeps on repeating or doing something or the other over and over, which makes you feel it isn't worth it. Mostly, they are the immediate family members whom you have to stay in contact with in spite of whatever you wish, at least until a certain period of time, till you become independent financially. Now, even when they do not do as much harm with their decisions, which aren't in your favor, as they did in the past, even when they've agreed to have committed a mistake and wronged you, you cannot just feel the same about them. I am no one to forgive, I know that, but how can I forget? Thus, there's a constant friction without even exchanging a word, which makes the whole environment toxic. So when one's relationship with someone so close is highly toxic, yet delicate and important, for example, one's parents, how can one escape from that toxicity while living with them? Even when you don't speak a word in countering their argument, even if they are habitual of doing things and saying things and behaving in a way they know that you don't like, and you being aware that they are not doing it to hurt you because it's their nature, but if you are compromising for the sake of peace, why can't the other person do the same? And if they can't, how can I maintain my equilibrium and prevent myself from going around in circles of overthinking and crying, which ultimately leads to depression and a lot of health ailments too, in my case? I keep quiet just to maintain the sanctity of the relationship, but I have my limitations, and I don't think anything good is going to change for the good from the other side. Please tell me how to prevent anyone from pushing buttons to my happiness. I've succeeded to a great extent when it comes to the rest of the world, but I am entirely clueless how to not feel anything when the person facing you is your parent. You see, there are many people who are in a similar situation, as I said. For example, a couple where a partner is abusive and aggressive towards the spouse, and the spouse, not being financially independent, cannot even consider the option of leaving the relationship. I have received emails like that too. So it is a difficult, a very real and difficult situation. And this teaching does not provide a miraculous answer, but rather it provides an insight into the situation. And this teaching is about one's attitude to life. This is what the teaching addresses. All the feelings this person is going through are justified for the reason that they are going through these feelings. And this is a point I keep making. Everything that arises is a happening that is meant to happen. And here is a person struggling with the understanding, knowing the basics of this teaching, but forced to be in a relationship, a rinanubandhan, in the bondage of a family relationship which he or she is unable to exit from. Now, the word toxic has been used a few times, and there are two ways to look at this. Certainly, one could call it a toxic relationship if the other is always being aggressive, being mean, and so on and so forth. To be in that environment constantly means one is in an environment of toxicity in that sense. And no matter how deep the teachings are, the situation does not change. That is what happened. Now, the first point is, has the teaching that nobody is the doer of their actions been accepted totally, or is it a partial acceptance? This is very important, because an intellectual understanding can be a partial acceptance. So, if I accept the situation totally, which includes the fact that it is more than unlikely that the other person will change, and also includes the fact that, and this is something not easy to accept, that I myself am made a certain way, and it's not easy to change that either. You see, what happens is acceptance gets externalized. I must accept the situation I am in, and that includes yourself. I must accept people the way they are. That includes yourself. Because we look at everything as it is outside us. If we feel that the environment is toxic, we are part of the environment. Toxicity is also recognized as toxicity. How is that? Not to say the environment is not toxic, but the point being made here is we have to look at it in totality, not with separation. Now, it is true that an unhappy person in a house, let's say, tries to make the others unhappy. It is quite true. It may be an unconscious behavior. You see? Because the ego feeds on this. As Osho rightly said, that in relationships, if one partner feels that, sorry, they are unable to make the other happy, then the partner may try to make the spouse unhappy, because at least it will then know there's something I can do. I can make the other person unhappy. That is how the ego works. Because for the unhappy person, they don't want smiling faces all around, you see. It is also true that the etheric body of someone who is depressed or negative, so to speak, etc., etc., is contracted. And at an energetic and vibrational level, it pulls others down, so to speak. It is true. But given the situation, one must understand that the pure light of presence is not subject to such forces. For example, if you are unhappy and you went into Ramana Maharshi's satsang hall, he would not become unhappy. You see, that is the point. So very important point to understand. We are looking at this very pragmatic situation this person has raised. To understand, and I will read out some words which struck me, that perhaps one has to relook at this email in a certain way to get to the core of this issue. Once again, the pure light of presence does not know what toxicity is. This does not mean that this is the way out to survive this toxic relationship. Because as an individual, we have to do precisely that which we think and feel we should do. That is the mechanics of life and living. But if the understanding is total, that nobody is the doer of their actions, so no further ill will or negativity is introduced into this equation, what happens is witnessing takes place more and more. Because then the me no longer considers itself as a target. When the me no longer considers itself as a target, which it loves to, look at me, I am the victim, I am the target, and so on. Then, even when there is hurt, which is again a very human response, after all, it's a parent. That hurt is witnessed as hurt with the knowing that the other is truly not the doer of their actions. It is the understanding which provides the soothing balm. There is no miracle fix. Of course, the miracle fix would be to walk out of this equation, which is also appropriate, but the person is unable to. These are the limitations imposed by this relationship. For example, even when you don't speak a word in countering their argument, very good. Even if they are habitual of doing things, saying things, and behaving in the way they know you don't like. That is what people do. They know how to push your buttons. They know it. So, what is the point of this, you see? People will behave so that they elicit a reaction. The ego will behave in a way so it elicits a reaction from the other. Because then it feels, wow, I do something and the other ego reacts. That is how this mischievous ego operates. Even the doing may be unconscious. What is still sought is the reaction. The action and reaction loop. And this question, behaving in a way they know you don't like, and you being aware that they are not doing it to hurt you because it's their nature, but you are compromising for the sake of peace, So why can't the other person do the same? Simply because the other person does not have the understanding. How can we expect the other person to do what we would like them to do based on our understanding? There are so many relationships where everyone in the family, or let's say a couple, they are on different journeys. How can we expect others to have the same level of understanding that we have? They might be operating on a different level of understanding. So this must drop for peace to shine through. This point, why can't the other person do the same? This question, if it remains, means we still want the others to be a certain way. And in most cases, truly, people's patterns, people's conditioning is so hardwired since birth that they are not aware of what is happening. That includes us. We may think we are paragons of virtue, but that is far from the truth. How can I maintain my equilibrium and prevent myself from going round in circles of overthinking? Overthinking will not happen with this understanding. It is this, precisely this point. With the understanding, the thinking mind is finished. Pain will be there. Hurt will be there. But there is no involvement in it. This is the gift of the teaching. Certain situations in life must be faced. That is why one has incarnated. As Ramana Maharshi would say, the prarabdha karma. But what happens is that we get entangled in that through the sense of doership and create a stronger bond which starts perpetuating. The bandhan, the bondage of the relationship is not freed. And we have to be careful with this. How many relationships in our lives where there is a blame game happening, where there is ill will, spite, jealousy, malice, and so on. How many of our relationships are defined by these attributes determines our own suffering. And truly, as Rameshji would say, peace in daily living means harmonious relationships. If your relationships are harmonious, you could consider it as a day of victory, a life of victory, so to speak. Please tell me how to prevent anyone from pushing buttons to my happiness. You see, if one's happiness depends on others pushing one's buttons and not pushing one's buttons, that happiness will never be found. Buttons are there to be pushed. In the elevator, buttons are not displayed as a piece of art. They are meant to be pushed. So people will push them. The whole point is that true happiness is not connected with the buttons being pushed. And therefore, in that sense, what people do truly becomes irrelevant. I am no one to forgive, I know, but how can I forget? Who is this one who doesn't want to forget? Who is the me that does not want to forget what has been done to it? One doesn't want to forget for various reasons, but most likely, one does not want to forget because the thought is there. They did this to me, and so I will not forget it. You see, memory is a very crucial factor for living. Pure memory, as I call it. For example, as we have discussed many times, the memory is there that if you cross the road without looking left and right, you are asking for trouble. Biological response to memory. What is the psychological memory? All the baggage which we have been carrying, all the burden we have been carrying of what people did to us, I cannot forget that. Nobody is asking you to forget it. The memory is bound to be there as a pure memory of what happened. But what is the psychological layer superimposed on that memory, and is one now operating from that memory? Which is what we do, because the ego is designed that way. So if someone hurts me, then I feel everyone else can hurt me, right? That is how the ego operates. And thus, the burden of memory starts increasing. And as one lives more and more years on the planet, this burden starts getting very heavy. What others did to me. What my father did to me, what my mother did to me, what my spouse did to me, what my children did to me, what my colleagues did to me. To me, to me, to me, to me. So it's all pointing back from all directions. The me gets this sustenance that now I know I exist because it all points back to me. Because they did this to me. This is how the me operates. It just has to be seen. The me has to be seen and exposed in the light of understanding. Nothing else need be done. Because trying to do something about it is the me coming in through the back door. I can do something about it. It is the same me. It's a very naughty me, you see. The only thing I would like to end on as far as this question is concerned is that we will be quite surprised at our strength to let certain relationships and situations go. What I mean is, sometimes there's also a fear. What will I do without this person who has looked after me? My spouse or my parent. I don't have the ability to earn money on my own. I may not be a success, and so on and so forth. But if there is a degree of trust and an acceptance of the divine will, sometimes the strength also comes. The strength, the shakti, to let go of a particular situation or relationship. Something one may not be able to have fathomed earlier. And somehow the universe supports such a decision. Because in many cases, our conditioning is what prevents us from taking a certain leap of faith. What is the faith? Not that the outcome is something I will get because I want it. The faith that whatever is destined to happen will happen. So, while it may be a tricky situation where there's financial dependence involved on a person, if one introspects, looks at things objectively, one may find a window of opportunity. One may not. It depends on a case-to-case basis. But sometimes that faith is needed to take what one could perhaps classify as a bold decision. And that is what being rooted in knowing that whatever happens is God's will, that it enables such decisions also to be taken if they are meant to be taken. And if a toxic person and a toxic environment impacts one, it also works the other way. In a being where pure presence shines, most certainly the others in the house are impacted. If the sun shines in your house, you are bound to feel the rays of the sun. You are bound to be immersed in sunlight. Is there a choice? The Buddha's auric field stretched for miles. I don't know whether it's 18 miles or 25 miles, but if you read up on it, people found that when they entered that space, they started coming from out of town to see him. Their minds started calming down way before they reached him. So if toxicity can impact others, so can presence. In fact, much more so. All right. If anyone would like to ask anything or share anything, we can take the questions now. There are a couple of points I'd like to make here. One is that if travel seems to be happening, I am scheduled to be in South India, Pondicherry and Tiruvannamalai, on November 22nd, 23rd, 24th, 25th. Details are with our website if you write to info@gautamsachdeva.com. So if you live in these places, if you are there when I am there, then I would be happy to meet you. Of course, there will be no talks, no programs at all. It's not appropriate given the situation. But if we happen to be there at the ashrams or somewhere around, then it would be my pleasure to do a namaste to you with the appropriate social distancing. Apparently, it seems namaste is becoming the most popular form of greeting worldwide now. It reminds me of a joke which obviously emerged in the lockdown, where a man won $1 million by buying a lottery ticket. So his friend asked him, "What are you going to do with $1 million?" And he replied, saying, "I will start practicing social distancing." I'll tell you, all these new words which come into the vocabulary when these things happen, it's quite amazing. Oh yes, the other thing is, I'm not sure if I mentioned it, but the new book called Sea of Calm is out now. And it is questions and answers from the earlier talks. So if you've enjoyed reading the earlier books, you might want to pick up this one and see what is in store. Okay. Yes, Sumaya. Are you there? Hello.
Yeah, can you hear me, sir?
Yes.
Hello.
Yes, I can hear you.
Yeah, first, my pranam, and I really say that you are my God, comes in the form of a guru, and all my questions are answered. Even today, your first question, someone asked, but it is all, everything is in my feeling. I literally cried, nothing else. I really wanted to say thank you so much. Your teaching made me, I'm living the teaching. All I have to say, it's only a thanking note for you, that a degree of trust. Now, finally, you said acceptance of divine strength. Strength, Shakti will come. Yes, I take all your words. I live in all your words. And every day, like acceptance, peace of mind needs to be sorted out. Accept others, accept yourself. For D to happen, C to happen. For C to happen, B to happen. So everything needs to happen, and all your words are mantras for me, sir. I've written everything in my diary, so it is really, I'm practicing it every day. I'm live the teaching. My final note is a thanking note from my to you, sir. Pranam Guruji, nothing else is.
Beautiful. Thank you. Only someone who lives the teaching can feel so deeply as you do, you know. So that's a testament in itself. Thank you. Yes, Holger.
Gautam, I also want to thank you. Today I felt a little sick on my breathing, and was just considering just to go to bed early. Here it's now 11 o'clock, and it's so beautiful just to be here in satsang, and because I feel so much better, there's so much light and so much relief, and it's just beautiful to experience this, and I just want to thank you.
Thank you, Holger. You're always very sweet and generous with your words. Thank you. You see, it's, you can hear that noise. That's the hammering of the shell of the ego. Rameshji would say, tap, 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 till it cracks. That is what happens. And you see, when the light starts shining through, sometimes it is a gradual process, sometimes it is sudden. For example, supposing there's a lot of encrustation, which is solid, and tap, tap, tap seems to be making no difference, but the tapping is still going on. The tapping, which is the teaching being constantly hammered, is still going on, and suddenly the crack opens up and the light shines through. That happens. In my case, I think there was such a total acceptance that it didn't take many taps, you know. So I did not have any dramatic moment of light shining through or awakening or whatever you call it. But It's an important point because some people may see a gradual absorption of this teaching and can see over time how things are changing for them, while for others, it can be sudden. It can be very sudden. So that is how it tends to work. But the beauty of it is that consciousness, Shakti, knows precisely what is appropriate for each person. We have to give up controlling the outcome of our spiritual journey and the Guru as consciousness. You see, why would it be in Indian mythology and the tales of gods and goddesses? People would worship the Devas and the various gods, but ultimately they had to go to Shiva. Why? Shiva is the Adi Guru, the first Guru. The Guru is above God. What does that mean? Not the Guru as a person, as consciousness. It is a very important, significant process, you could say, in the Indian spiritual tradition. Because when a person actually bows down to whom they consider a guru, for example, it is actually not the guru doing anything. It is the process of bowing down, the surrender at the feet of a higher power. That is the transformative process, you see. That is a very important point to note, that one is not bowing down to another person. It may appear so, but the act of surrender, that there is a will which is far more omnipresent and omnipotent than my individual will, as life has taught me, that surrender happens. And for an ego to surrender before what it perceives as another ego is a big act of surrender. And that is why the masters say, in such cases, even whether the guru is a genuine or fake guru is irrelevant, because the surrender has already happened. It is so important, this point. When we surrender to life, when we surrender to consciousness, when we surrender to what is, all this maya of my will, which is creating all the trouble, that frees up. So that is what happens through the process of surrender. Now, destiny and free will, for example. Why is this concept of destiny so important in this teaching? It is not saying that the truth is everything is destined. Please understand that. It is trying to show the limitations of the individual will. So like they are polaric opposites, left and right, up and down, so on and so forth, one could say there's destiny and free will. The important point is why destiny is proposed is to show how truly inconsequential one's so-called free will is. And the Bhagavad Gita is all about this. But ultimately, destiny and free will are for the body. For the sage who has transcended the limitations of the body and is living as pure presence, even destiny is irrelevant, you see. Even destiny is irrelevant. An acceptance of what is brings about a profound silence, a deep silence. You know this, it's actually quite significant, because the shh is the exhalation the breath of death. That is why when we are overburdened, let's say we've had a hard day, you see people doing that. It's like a balloon deflating, right? The release, the letting go. First, do you know this is the index finger, if I'm not mistaken? And this is Jupiter, the planet Jupiter is linked to this finger. And Jupiter in Indian science of astronomy, astrology and all is the guru, consciousness. So this act doesn't come from nowhere, you see. Shh, be silent. Exhalation means silence. Out, death, breath of death. Consciousness, vertical time. Midpoint, polarities, left and right, Ida and Pingala, the subtle channels. Midpoint, Sushumna, here, the central channel. Such a deep significance in these acts which we don't realize where they come from. Silence of the mind. All right. Let's sit in silence for a couple of minutes. You see, this teaching requires a deep commitment, but not to the teaching. It requires a commitment to see the false as false, to use the cliche, to see the one in the many. Aurobindo had quite a beautiful pointer. You know, he said, when we gift things to people, are we giving them gifts as individuals? Like, this is my family, so there's a beautiful gift for this person in my family and so on. Or do we really have, and of course I'm paraphrasing Aurobindo here, do we have the knowing that the same consciousness functions through everyone, and therefore when we give a gift, we are gifting it to the one divine being? With what consciousness are we giving a gift? A me giving a gift to a you? Or consciousness giving a gift to consciousness? Which basically means consciousness giving a gift to itself. Then you would really be generous with your gifting, wouldn't you? But we just calculate, oh God, this costs so much money. Should I really give this gift to this person? That's the whole thing. That is the whole thing. Wouldn't you selectively gift, so to speak, your presence to some people and less to others? Doesn't make sense. The sun is not shining selectively on people. Doesn't make sense. It is the individual which has created these levels. And compartmentalized and segmented the people it knows. I love these more than others. These are okay. These are friends. These are my truly near and dear ones, and so on and so forth. The sage does not operate this way. That is why you will see if someone new approaches a teacher, the teacher is equally warm and intimate with someone new than with someone who's been sitting at his feet for 10 years. I have seen this with my own teacher when he was alive. And some people didn't like it. Who is this stranger who's come? But the teacher sees no separation. The teacher sees the one consciousness in all. And that is why teachers attract so many people. That instant felt oneness with being is what takes place. But those who expect special treatment are in for trouble. It reminds me of the incident. I think it was Satya Sai Baba, I'm not sure. There was a man, he was a millionaire apparently, who was made in charge of announcing on stage when there were big gatherings that, you know, this is going to be the program and this is the thing and blah, blah, blah. And he started feeling very proud of his role. And people started approaching him, devotees started approaching him to get in touch with Satya Sai Baba and so on and so forth. So the ego became even more inflated. And he felt really happy that, my God, all these guys know how close I am to my teacher, master. And so one day he mentioned this to him, to Sai Baba. You know, I must admit, you made me feel so special by giving me this role. I just feel great doing it. I feel loved by everyone. I feel important and so on and so forth. And he was met with silence. And Sai Baba told him, he said, I think there's been a big misunderstanding here. The only reason I gave you this role is because you needed it more than the others. You needed to be closer to me more than the others. And that is the reason I gave you this role. But you have gone and misinterpreted the whole thing. So should you be more grateful for being given this opportunity, or are you bloating and happy that you are being recognized as someone special by the others? Which one is it? Where does the gratitude to God lie? Is it misplaced? That is why Maharaj would kick people out of his satsang after a few days. He didn't want them to become dependent on the teaching or the teacher. More importantly, there was no space in his attic. So new people could not enter, you see. And Rameshji was the opposite, because he saw people, I mean, there were people who had moved to Mumbai for years to attend his daily satsangs. And one of them asked him, that I know what you say. Every day I know what's going to escape your lips. I imbibe the teaching, but yet I find myself there every day. And Rameshji said, what's the problem? It is like a song that appeals to you. The teaching has become a song that you like to listen to again and again and again. And he had ample room in his home. So there was no question of lack of space for him. I call them the lineage of living room gurus.